Okay, I think we can start now. So, first of all, welcome everybody to this November 2018 meditation retreat. This first evening is obviously going to be very light. People, even though some of you have been here many times before, still it takes a while just to check in and to be comfortable, get everything all settled. But because I can recognize many of you, it should be quite clear just how these retreats run. So one of the important things to enable a person to get into some peaceful meditation is learn how to not be so tense. I know many people, they look at meditation as a means of relieving the tension, so they can have a relaxed body. And obviously for some traditions, they're always like strengthening and emphasizing things like effort and force. And it's true that through force, and often it comes from fear, that you can learn how to sit without moving for long periods of time. And indeed, even not being disturbed by external influences. And I remember seeing, even as a child, that these people, they could stand for hours without moving. They were called the household guards outside Buckingham Palace. And people would try and take photographs of them and tease them, but still they would not move. But I never saw any of those soldiers become enlightened. So just through force, it's not the way to get any peace at all in this meditation. So instead we do something which is a little different. We learn how to relax, to let go, and to allow things to become peaceful all by themselves. And often, you know, I'm reminded of the story of the Buddha, that for many years, once he decided to renounce and go searching for wisdom and for peace, he tried many forceful methods. But then, realizing that none of those was working, decided to try something different. And the different way was to relax, to eat properly, to sleep properly. And as you all know, that when he made that resolution to actually to follow what he called the middle path, his five friends abandoned him, thinking that this could not be the way to achieve anything worthwhile, thinking that he was going too far in indulgence, that he should be too ascetic, he should be more ascetic. And so as a result of that, his five friends abandoned him. And being by himself, he decided to, again, to rest, relax, to wash, have a strong body. And then he found this beautiful place by the river Nirangela, here by the river Serpentine, or actually Carnet Brook, the river Dana, the middle of the monastery, middle of the Jhana Grove. And then he sat under a beautiful tree, having had a wonderful meal, and it had beautiful breezes coming over the river Nirangela, just like we have beautiful breezes coming in when the aircon is turned on, and nice and cool. Our trouble is that for some people, cool is freezing, and for some people, that cool is hot. It's very hard to find a middle way, but nevertheless, it's a pretty cooling in here. And then, having had a good meal, sat under the Bodhi tree and became fully enlightened. And I always remember just the causes for those deep meditations and that enlightenment. Where did it come from? And first of all, it did come from relaxing the body, so the body could be at ease and peaceful. And the same attitude which relaxed his body so it could disappear and not be a problem, to do the same with his mind, to literally relax the mind, so that the thoughts and the restlessness which bother many people can be allowed to subside. And many of these similes you'll probably hear me saying later on during this retreat, expanding them. But one of the teachings which I got from Ajahn Chah, which was strange, because I never thought this was possible before. And he would pick up his hand and he would wave it up and down. And he'd wave it up and down and said, "This represents a leaf on a tree. And the only reason why the leaf is moving is because a wind is blowing. It's not natural for a leaf to be blowing. It's only something outside of it that's making it move. So a leaf to be moving. So once the wind subsides, then the leaf moves less and less and less until the leaf becomes perfectly still all by itself. That's its natural state, to be still. It only moves because something outside of it is making it move, the wind." So Ajahn Chah continued, "It's the same with the human mind. The nature of the human mind is to be still. It's its default state. It only moves, thinks, is restless because something outside of it is making it move. And what is that? It is wanting. Wanting something. Because whenever you want something, also want to get rid of stuff, that is what makes your mind move. That's what makes the thoughts and plans in the mind. How to get what you want, how to get rid of what disturbs you. But once that wanting is let go of, it's found a way past that, subsides. And when I say you can't get rid of the wanting, because that's you wanting to not want, it just goes round and round. You find these beautiful ways of just letting the wanting subside. Things like contentment, things like this is good enough, things like renouncing control, things like just like learning how to be in the present moment. Because in the present moment, there's no future, there's no place where wanting can aim for. Where we let go of the past, there's nothing which wanting has to fix or settle scores. As long as we really do let go of past and future, then the wanting just can't find a place to settle in us. It can't do anything. So that's one of the other reasons why when we learn how to be in the present, be aware, contented and easily satisfied, it means that we don't want anything. But then that's a bit strange, because for many people, we're not used to being non-control freaks. Because that's the tool of a control freak, wanting something. Even wanting good things. Wanting to get rid of bad things. Wanting to obviously to do something good for the world. That still makes your mind move. And you never find any stillness. Again, going back to the story of the Buddha's own enlightenment, just one of the things which Mara, the tempter, decided to try and stop the Buddha getting enlightened at all costs. And he said, why not be, they called it like a powerful world-turning king, like a monarch, a powerful emperor, who could do so much for this world, who could solve so many problems. But even that, wanting to solve people's problems, no, it's impossible. So the only thing the Buddha realized there was he was just trying to get the Buddha to be disturbed. There's one story I read in a book many, many years ago in China. A long time ago, there were these two hermits who lived on top of a mountain. Well, actually, one lived on top of the mountain. The other lived about 3/4 of the way down. And they were very wise, very simple. They had an attendant each, and a reputation for wisdom and for just being so simple and so peaceful but wise got to the emperor. And the emperor of Japan at the time was having so much trouble with ministers always arguing with one another and never being able to get anything done in his empire in China. So he went with some of his bodyguard to that mountain. He climbed up to the top first of all to actually consult with the top hermit of the mountain and said to him, "Your country needs your assistance. It needs your great wisdom and compassion, and I know that you are not corrupt. You can live so simply. You won't take anything for yourself. Your service will be a great benefit to this empire, this country, and I don't know who else to turn to." And at that, even being invited by the Emperor of China, this monk just went to the little stream passing by his hermitage, and he washed out his ear. At which the emperor realized what he meant. And so the emperor just went down to the second hermit. And just as he reached the second hermit, the attendant of the top hermit sort of caught up with His Majesty the Emperor, but then said to the second hermit, he said, "I've got a message for you from the top hermit. Please don't drink the water, there's some filth in it." At which point the Emperor realized he's not going to convince these two hermits to take on such responsibilities, where there's lots of wanting and lots of thinking and lots of duties. Instead, the emperor just left. The job of the hermits is something else. Because there's no way that you can get your mind to be peaceful when you're running sort of an empire, or where you're running a family, or where you're running even your own body, or even running your own mind. There's always things to do and get rid of and train and get somewhere. This is one of the other things which is one of the problems with our modern life. We always want to improve, especially self-improvement. Now have a think about that, self-improvement. How many times have you heard Buddhist monks saying there's no self? So what the heck are you trying to improve? Isn't it good enough? So, there's simile. Was it hot today for you when you're coming here? So shall we try and improve the climate? I'll use my powers and ask the sun, please don't be so hot for this week. Can you do something like that? If I did, or if somebody did, what would the sun do? I'd get complaints. It's supposed to be hot today, now you made it cold. Can you please heat it up again? I'm always really, really surprised why it is that when it's like a hot day like today and I want to turn the aircon on, people are still wearing blankets. And I said, "Aren't you hot?" I said, "No, we're cold, and it's 25, 26. I said, "I'm boiling." So anyway, you can't please everybody. In fact, I can't even please myself. Sometimes I like it hot, sometimes I like it cold. So this is the point of trying to improve things and trying to get perfection. You can never find that. Another little anecdote story, which I read this, I think it was in a Time magazine a long time ago. There was a gentleman in the United States, almost 100 years ago now, who made a fortune, when there was a boom time, the roaring 20s in the United States. But instead of waiting for the crash, he'd retired, cashed out all his money, but then said, "Why should I spend the rest of my life in the United States? I've got so much money, I don't need to work anymore. I can find the most beautiful place in the whole world. And so he went to the libraries and he checked the temperatures, the climate, just the peace, the culture of the places in the world. And he chose a little island in the South Pacific, which no one had ever heard of before. Now, a quiet place where it was great climate, lots of food, very beautiful sort of indigenous people. And he thought, this is the place I'm going to retire for a nice, peaceful life. And the place he chose was called Guadalcanal, which anybody who knows your history, especially of the Second World War, was the place of two battles, major battles, with the Japanese and the US Army trying to blow each other up and big aircraft carriers pummeling. And he was right in the middle of it. And he went there for peace and quiet and ended up being in the middle of a war zone. And when I saw that, I said, just wherever you go in this world, you want to find the most peaceful place, a nice quiet place where you can relax and be peaceful forever after. You cannot guarantee the place will be so peaceful. That's the trouble of our world. To find peace outside the most perfect place. You may wander all over the world to find the most perfect place. But of course, you know, the most perfect place is in here. When you are at peace with yourself, peace with the world, we know how to find peace. You can find peace anywhere. Just talking a little earlier with Suwadi about one of the senior monks. And I was always impressed by a senior monk in Thailand called Prathap Sidimuni, who was the abbot of a monastery called Wat Mahathat, just on the banks of the Chao Phraya River in Thailand. This was many years ago, and he was a very good monk, but such a good monk, had many sort of skills, even his meditation, and very simple living monk. But eventually, because people wanted to make use of his skills, he was like the number two in the hierarchy in Thailand. And the head monk, the Sangharaja, who, being a head monk, gets many perks, that he was getting old, and the number two, the next in line, is Prathap Sidimuni, that the number three monk was jealous. The number three monk wanted to take over, but this monk was in his way. So he decided to record many of this monk's talks and to cut a piece here, cut a piece there, put it all together to prove that this monk was actually a communist. At the time when sort of being a communist in Southeast Asia was almost like a crime. And so he took the evidence to a court, and this number two monk was actually convicted of being a communist. He was stripped of his robe and put in jail for 2 years. And eventually they found out that he was innocent. It was all a trumped up. But in the meantime, when he was released, they said, oh, we're terribly sorry. He said, what are you talking about being sorry? I had a wonderful time, 2 years, when I could catch up on my studies and reading, where I could meditate nice and peacefully, but I didn't have people asking for questions or asking me to go and to do some chanting and do some dharanas. They didn't ask me to teach retreats or to run it. This is a beautiful time. It's like a retreat for 2 years. I had a wonderful time. Thank you so much. His response about being put in jail for something he didn't do, I thought, what a wonderful thing that was. He was happy in jail. Peaceful. You don't need the perfect place outside if you have a very peaceful and wise and compassionate mind. Any place you can find peace and contentment and freedom. So it's not the world which we have to do battle with. It's our mind, and just learning how to see the peace and beauty anywhere, wherever it happens to be. If it's hot, if you're sick, if you're tired, if you're fed up. Wonderful! Thank you for being fed up. I haven't been fed up for years. Oh, it's such a nostalgia, being fed up again. It's one of the reasons why some of those books which I've written and stories which I've told, and every now and again somebody gets a really good title for those books. And of course one of those books is the Don't Worry, Be Grumpy book. What's that got to do with Buddhism? Don't worry, being grumpy, being miserable. Ajahn Brahm, why are you allowing people to be grumpy? They should do something about it. Don't be grumpy. And of course, the story behind that was here on one of these meditation retreats some years ago. There was a young lady, and after 3 or 4 days, she was really getting more and more fed up. All this, let's let go and be happy. And she saw all these other meditators smiling and being joyful and laughing at all these stories which I told, and she never laughed at any of my jokes. Heard them before. I know that story. She was really miserable and grumpy. And so that's when she came to, and talking to anybody else didn't help at all. I said, oh, just let go. I said, I don't want to hear that word let go anymore. No, just be happy. No, every time she saw somebody else smile and be happy, that made her feel worse. They thought of smiling at her on purpose, just to make her feel so inadequate and miserable. So, that's when she came to see me and she wanted to leave. At which point I asked her, just wait for a few moments. And went into my office, turned on the computer, and got out a piece of letterhead, and I typed out in the best Gothic script I could, like most certificates. They have this beautiful Gothic script and a nice letterheaded paper. And it was the very first grumpy license I ever wrote. And I said that this license grants to, and I said her name underneath, permission to be grumpy. At any time, for any reason, or no reason in particular. For the rest of eternity until the coming of Maitreya Buddha, signed Ajahn Brahma Wangso. And I presented to her formally, just like you give someone a marriage license or a driving license, or you get your degree from university. And then I presented to her, here you are, you have now have my permission, your teacher, you respect a lot, you have my permission to be grumpy. So you don't have to be happy anymore. And at that point, once she was allowed to be grumpy, she smiled and was happy for the rest of the retreat. Fighting the grumpiness, the fighting the tiredness, the finding you don't like it hot, you got sick or whatever it is. It's the fighting it, that's the problem. When you allow it to be, you let it be. Not only you got permission to be grumpy, but you find you don't want to be grumpy anymore. Because she was being grumpy, suffering about being suffering. So once you took that, it's okay to suffer, then she wasn't suffering anymore. This is very simple teachings, but teachings which we sometimes forget. So we learn how to let things be. Leave them alone. Stop wanting things to be different. Making peace with the world, however this world happens to be for you. And for those of you who think, that's not Buddhism as I learnt it at school or in the temples, they just often just quote, you know, the Four Noble Truths. And I say there are two types of meditation. Who knows? And if you know this before, you know the answers, please keep your hands down. Sometimes people spoil it. They've heard these questions before. What are the two types of meditation? Don't say samatha vipassana, because that's wrong. The two types of meditation are Second Noble Truth Meditation and Third Noble Truth Meditation. What is the Second Noble Truth? Suffering. Wanting is a cause of suffering. Craving, wanting, that causes suffering. So if you want something, you are suffering. And if your meditation is getting really terrible and you're really suffering, it's because you've been doing Second Noble Truth Meditation. You're wanting something. Wanting to get somewhere. You know, you've had to do a lot of wanting to get somewhere to arrive here. Now you've arrived here, you're here. So let go and relax and enjoy being here. So wanting anything is a cause of suffering. So if your meditation is suffering, you're not having a good time, it's not working for you, it's always because you're wanting something. And Third Noble Truth Meditation? Enlightenment, the ultimate happiness, paramang sukhang. The ultimate happiness comes from letting go of wanting. No wanting at all. So, if you're having a good time, your meditation is really peaceful and joyful. Why? Because you didn't want anything. You're happy to be here. You're joyful. Because you're not wasting energy fighting the world. Fighting the world outside, fighting the past, fighting the future, or fighting your own mind. This is not a violent path. A very peaceful path, compassionate path, being with things, not against them. That's to quote George W. Bush. You're either for us or against us. Was it George W. Bush? You're either for us or against us. So you're for the present moment. Don't be against it. Otherwise you find you're creating suffering for yourself. So anyway, little by little, you find if you're hot, if you're cold, if you're tired, if you're sick, if you're full of energy, you can always meditate if you know how to be, instead of trying to get somewhere and do something. Yes, for the first few days, you will be tired. You will be sleepy. You will sometimes nod off. If you do feel sleepy and nod off, please sit on the floor, not on the chairs. Because if you sit on the chairs and nod off, you might fall off and hit your head. And we cannot afford the insurance. So we have got these chairs with the armrests, but it seems those have already been commandeered by the nuns, maybe because you're feeling very sleepy. Or we can always get you a motorbike helmet to wear, so if you fall off. So if you feel sleepy, what's the best way of overcoming sleepiness? Yeah, it's what we've got beds for. Have you seen those beds in your huts, in your rooms? They're very comfortable. So if you're sleepy, rest. If you say, no, that's just indulging, it's that, no. Just, hopefully you respect me, I've got a good reputation. So please follow what I'm saying. You know, sometimes people always want the sort of the weird solutions. When I was tired in Thailand, first went there, always really tired. And I asked one of the senior monks, can you give me some technique, some teaching, so I can get more energy up? And he said, like, striving or just focusing on a piece of the body and just getting some energy up from there, doing more walking meditation, help. You know the advice he gave, and it really worked? He said, eat more rice. I never thought about that. Yeah, because I thought it was something sort of, you know, my meditation was wrong. But he was watching what I was doing, and I was only eating a tiny bit of rice. If your car is not working properly, does it run out of fuel? That's the reason why it wasn't working. I didn't have enough fuel in my body. I just had a slightly bigger piece of rice, and then my energy was there. I had the energy. Or sometimes, you know, if it's really hot for you here, that sometimes it's natural, it's not the right temperature, so you feel a bit sleepy. And then you've got your rooms to sit in, you know, they're really nice and can be very cool. You can go and sit in the shower if you want, and you put a hot towel over your head. Just get it as sort of comfortable as you possibly can. The reason I say that was because I'd always had lots and lots of trouble with sleepiness when I was a monk, a young monk in Thailand. Tried everything to try and overcome the sleepiness. And very rarely did it work. And then one day, and just after about 1 year, I went down to Bangkok to renew my visa. And the place where we could stay was in Wat Bawon. It was a royal monastery. And you were permitted to stay there. They had a special, you know, newly erected building, you know, where visiting monks could stay. So got permission to stay there. And they also had a little lecture theatre which was air-conditioned. And because we would get up really early in the morning at 3 a.m., that we asked, is it okay if we use that for meditation between 3:30 and, say, 5? Because no one else would be using it there. I said, yeah, no trouble at all. And so, you know, we had the key. We'd go in there in the morning. And also that because the food in Bangkok was far more nutritious than the food you had over in northeast Thailand. And so I was surprised. I got up at 3:50 or 3 o'clock, went to toilet, went to meditate, 3:15, no sleepiness at all. It was brilliant. He has really good meditation. And why? Because made in England, not used to that temperature. You know, malnourished. And no, there was no mosquitoes in that room. It was amazing. It was so comfortable. And I realized that just the sleepiness was a physical thing. It was one of the reasons why the Buddha chose this beautiful, calm meadow by the river in what's now called Bodh Gaya. Peaceful, cool, not many mosquitoes. In those days, it would be like a here in Perth, like King's Park. A beautiful place where you can just sit quietly, comfortably. And I realized that after a while, Ajahn Brahm, you've been so stupid, you've been trying to fight this, when a lot of times it's just ordinary cause and effect. So because of that, and there's people from so many different upbringings here, please don't always think you have to meditate in this hall. You know, you can meditate in your room. You can meditate in the shower. You can meditate in Bodhinyana Monastery. You can meditate just now on the stupa outside. There's so many places you can find. If you really struggle with heat, you can even ask Bianca if you can meditate in the freezer in the kitchen. That's a bit extreme, but I don't know. But at least find a place, and you find that sometimes there's simple things that just save you a lot of time and a lot of pain. You don't use willpower. You use wisdom power. Why am I tired? Why am I restless? You know, why are these things happening? Oh, I don't mind saying this one. There was this one lady here during the rains retreat, and she was getting all this energy, this forces going through her body, especially through her head, like it was spinning. She was wondering, is this some sort of byproduct of deep meditation, what's going on? But then one day it really sort of got intense and someone took her to the hospital. You know what it was? She says, are these chakras opening? Is it something weird happening? And all it was dehydration. She wasn't drinking enough water. And she told me why, because you know, she wanted to do like 2-hour meditations at a time, 3-hour meditations at a time. And the problem is, you want to do 3 hours, and as you're getting, so you have to go to the loo, and it gets very uncomfortable. Well, I'll do the way to solve that, drink less water. Then you can meditate longer. Silly stuff. And because of that, she was getting dehydrated, and that meant that, you know, she's getting all this really weird stuff going on. Not healthy at all. Simple things. All that time when first went to Malaysia, I don't know, many years ago, and people there, they were complaining about Samadhi headache. This wasn't in Penang, this was in KL. Samadhi headache. What? Meditation headache. I said, this is weird, this is crazy. Now you meditate to overcome headaches, you know, to get past them, to be healthy and just to be happy. What are you talking about? Meditation headache? I said, yeah, it's a big problem in that part of KL. And then I sort of, because I'd never seen that before. Never happened in Thailand, Samadhi headache. Not in where I came from. I said, well, this is really weird. I said, you know what the reason was? It always has to be some sort of too much effort somewhere. But what the effort was always thinking you had to focus on the tip of your nose. Meditate on the tip of the nose. That's the only place you can meditate, on the tip of the nose. And you know what was happening? Because that they were focusing, supposed to be just focusing their mind on the tip of their nose. But whenever you focus the mind, you always actually focus your eyes as well, your eyeballs. So what was actually happening? They didn't realize this because they had their eyelids closed. If they had their eyelids open, people could have seen it straight away. Eyelids open. The eyes were... they're going cross-eyed. And I've been doing it for 10 seconds. I'm getting a bit of a stress headache across here. And that's all it was, simple stuff. But you know, sometimes people want to have all the deep teachings. When there's something simple going on there. So in your meditation, if you've got too much sloth and torpor, sleepiness, it is because either you haven't eaten properly, you've just come on a long trip from overseas, you're tired, maybe you're going through some sort of physical problem. Look, sometimes people say, Ajahn Brahm, how is your health? And sometimes they see this, they don't believe me, that I'm very healthy. And just very recently, last October, that I had my health check. And my health check was when I was invited over to Korea by one of my friends, Venerable Gaksan, and because of the rapprochement between North and South Korea, they wanted to build upon that by the Jogji order. That's the biggest order of monks and nuns over in Korea, South Korea. They wanted to have like a meditation day. Just first of all, next to the demilitarized zone in the peace park. And part of that was a walking meditation inside the DMZ, the demilitarized zone. And, you know, not sort of, you know, really asking exactly what are you doing. All the other monks, including Ajahn Gunha, was there. And Ajahn Gunha is too sick to go. He's the same age as me. So they asked me to lead 6,000 Korean Buddhists inside the demilitarized zone. And I said, walking. I always thought walking meditation was just you stand on one end, you walk very slowly, watching your feet as you move. And this was not like you know, the walking meditation which I do. It was just like a hike. You know, walking for a long time and then just spreading some loving kindness. And, you know, inside the demilitarized zone, 6.5 kilometers inside. And so to get there, it's a 3-hour walk. And fast. But, you know, I was telling someone even today that this was a DMZ, demilitarized zone. And so, you know, you had to get permission from the soldiers to go through on the other side of the barbed wire. And it was dangerous. And there was shooting. And, you know, I was shot many times. I was. Click, click, click. With cameras and videos and TV cameras. So I was shot many times. But anyway, the monk kept on asking me, "You okay? You okay? You okay?" I said, "Yeah, much better than you." Because I was walking really fast. Just to test, see just how is my health. Perfect. So it's a long walk in the sun, there was no water. So did fine. So sometimes the power of your attitude, that is really important. You think, "Oh, this is too much for me, oh, I can't do this." But you know, you look at sort of the physical things first of all, especially in this meditation retreat. So you take a break when you need a break. Because there are also sometimes, you know, that you feel that there's something up, something wrong.